6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting Iran nuclear talks extended again. International nuclear talks on a comprehensive agreement with Iran have been extended a third time, but Western officials suggest this will be the last. The talks must conclude in the next 48 hours. The original deadline was set for June 30 and extended to Tuesday. Federica Mogherini is the European Union's foreign policy chief.
We are moving forward. We entered into the most difficult and sensitive part of the talks. We touched the difficult things, which is sometimes painful but needed if you need to get to an agreement. So I'm not talking about extension. I'm talking about taking the hours we need to try to complete our work.
The talks between the six world powers and Tehran aim to cut Iran's uranium enrichment program to keep it from being able to build a bomb. Global sanctions that have wrecked the Iranian economy would be eased and eventually lifted. But Iran is said to be balking at demands for inspections of its military sites and has called for an end to a UN arms embargo. Heavily armed militants reportedly attacked a convoy of buses and army escorts near Mpeketoni in Kenya's eastern Lamu region. The French press agency says there were no immediate reports of casualties. That followed an early Tuesday attack on the northeast town of Mandera, claimed by al-Shabaab gunmen, who killed at least 14 people. 11 others were wounded. Joseph Nkasiri is a Kenyan cabinet official.
Once again, this attack is a clear reminder that al-Shabaab and its collaborators are determined to disrupt and subvert our way of life. I take this opportunity to reiterate that Kenya shall never be cowed by these evil murderers.
Mandera, the scene in December of a similar nighttime attack. This is VOA News. The Greek fiscal crisis appears to be down to one final meeting, a European Union summit scheduled Sunday. Leaders at an emergency Eurozone summit in Brussels Tuesday appeared frustrated with the latest reform improvements offered by Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras. Jean-Claude Juncker, president of the European Commission, says the Eurozone is prepared for all contingencies, including Greece's exit from the common currency, commonly known as a Grexit.
We have a Grexit scenario prepared in detail. We have a scenario as far as humanitarian aid is concerned. And we have, and that's the scenario I most prefer, a scenario how to deal with the problem now, keeping Greece as a member of the euro area.
Greece defaulted on a loan payment to the International Monetary Fund last week. On Sunday, Greek voters rejected any more austerity. In Yemen Tuesday, car bombs killed at least 5 people. One blast rocked the area around a mosque in the capital, Sana'a, killing one. A second was set off, killing 4 others in the southern city of Beida. Elements of the Afghan Taliban took part Tuesday night in a groundbreaking meeting with representatives of the Afghan government and other national and international stakeholders in Pakistan's capital, Islamabad. The dialogue was welcomed Tuesday by White House spokesman Josh Earnest.
This is an important step in advancing prospects for a credible peace. The United States commends the government of Afghanistan's prioritization of peace and reconciliation efforts with the Taliban. And we both acknowledge and appreciate Pakistan's important efforts to host these conversations.
Pakistani officials warn the process is going to be long and complicated, and quick breakthroughs should not be expected. Burundi's ruling party won the country's parliamentary elections held last month, the National Electoral Commission saying Tuesday it took 77 of 100 seats. A presidential poll is now scheduled July 15, but East African leaders have called for a 2-week delay amid political chaos following President Pierre Nkurunziza's controversial decision to run for a third term. Unidentified gunmen stormed state-run radio in the capital of Bangui of Central African Republic early Tuesday, but failed to gain entry to the main studio. A guard was briefly taken hostage, but later released. The impoverished nation has been gripped by sectarian violence since a March 2013 coup. Pope Francis travels to Bolivia Wednesday on the second leg of his Latin tour. In Ecuador's capital, Quito, Tuesday, he urged a crowd of more than 1 million to unite in their belief and help spread the Roman Catholic faith on the continent. An expert panel set up by the World Health Organization to examine the UN agency's Ebola epidemic response blasted the agency for organizational failures. The panel says the WHO does not have the capacity or organizational culture to deliver a full emergency public health response. I'm Victor Beatty.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today is Wednesday, July 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Boko Haram attacks killed dozens in northern Nigeria.
We are calling on the government to add more effort in tackling this Boko Haram and other attacks that are currently happening in the northern Nigeria.
Abdullahi Hassan is a student in Zaria City, Nigeria. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 2 million people are displaced by the conflict in South Sudan. An opposition member says Sudan's President Bashir's new government is just an old wine in new bottles. Harare City vendors resist forced relocation, and Burundi's ruling party wins last month's controversial parliamentary election.
My party got around 6% in these elections, so we have got 77 seats in the parliament.
Pascal Yabenda is chairman of Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party, and we'll tell you why pregnant women in Kenya say they enjoy eating stones. Those stories plus Mark Oldman Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon has condemned Boko Haram attacks in the Lake Chad basin countries, including deliberate targeting of Christians and Muslim worshippers during Ramadan in northeast Nigeria. In a statement Tuesday, Mr. Ban took note of what he calls President Muhammadu Buhari's determination to root out the Boko Haram menace. As Christine reports, a suicide bomber and gunman killed scores of state workers on Tuesday in the northern Nigerian city of Zaria in an attack that is likely the work of Boko Haram.
The blast targeted employees waiting outside a local government secretariat for an employment verification exercise in the city of Zaria in Nigeria's northern Kaduna state. Governor Nasser El-Rufai said in a Facebook post that 25 people were killed and 32 wounded. Among the dead was a 2-year-old. Zaria resident Mustafa Saw was walking by the secretariat when the blast occurred.
A lot of people have died in the process of screaming. And it's a very, very unfortunate in a holy month like this.
The blast comes amid a rising campaign of bomb and gun attacks across Nigeria's north by Boko Haram, which has been fighting for 6 years to impose its brand of strict Islamic law in the country. The group does not talk to the media and only occasionally releases videos claiming responsibility for individual attacks. But the extremists are thought to be behind the bombing of a mosque and restaurant in the city of Jos on Sunday that killed at least 44 people, as well as a series of attacks in the northeastern Borno state last week that left hundreds dead. The group has attacked Kaduna state less frequently than elsewhere in the north, and the attack in Zaria put locals on edge. Abdullahi Hassan is a student in Zaria.
We are calling on the government to add more effort in tackling this Boko Haram and other attacks that are currently happening in the northern Nigeria.
Recently inaugurated President Muhammadu Buhari has vowed to crack down on the group. Chris Stein for VOA News, Dakar.
Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party has again said the June 29 controversial parliamentary election was free, fair and transparent, despite opposition and African Union boycott. This came after the country's National Electoral Commission announced on Tuesday that the ruling party won 77 out of 100 seats in the National Assembly. The opposition had said the election were not free and fair because of security forces' crackdown on protesters and lack of independent media. Even the United Nations said the election took place in a climate of widespread fear and intimidation. But ruling party chairman Pascal Yabenda said the opposition won some seats, which means they took part in the election.
My party got around 6% in these elections. So we have got 77 seats in the parliament.
The opposition, we understand, boycotted the election. So if you got 77 seats, who won the other seats?
They lied. They didn't boycott. They had their manner of doing campaign door to door, which means that they have got some seats in the parliament, even if they don't say it loudly that they have done campaign. But we have seen that their members have voted, which means that they told them to vote.
You know, people say that the elections themselves were not free and fair because the opposition boycotted, and besides, the media was not allowed to operate.
You know, that is what we don't understand here in Burundi. See what happened in 2010, where these opposition didn't participate. Now, today, they didn't participate again, but it doesn't mean that no parties participate. We were four parties participating. If I understand what you say, it means that when you don't have this opposition, it means that there is no elections. There were elections which were fair, and security was all over the country, and so many people come to vote. It was a great number of the population which come to vote. So these elections were very fair.
According to the constitution, the 2006, it says that the parliamentary seats are supposed to be allocated according to ethnic groups. That is, 60% of the seats are supposed to go to the majority Hutu. Is your party a Hutu party?
My party is not a Hutu party. You know that in Burundi, according to Arusha Accord, we make the list of people and we mix Hutu and Tutsi, which means that among those people who were elected, we have Hutu and we have Tutsi. So no problem about ethnic group.
When I spoke with you yesterday, you were enthusiastic about the appointment of President Yoweri Museveni to be the mediator. But the opposition, I'm reading that the opposition do not want him to be.
You know, this opposition, I don't know what they want. So who will be the mediator in this Burundi crisis? Who will be the good mediator? If they had Jeanette, they say they don't want him. So Batili came. Maybe they'd like that Batili may stay here. But we saw that he had a hidden agenda. Now, for us, Museveni is welcome, and we are ready to work with him.
When we spoke yesterday, the East African community had asked for the presidential election to be postponed. Do you know now what is supposed to be the new date for election?
We don't know yet the date, but as I told you yesterday, we respect these heads of states in our region, the East African community. We respect them, we respect their decisions. But as I told you yesterday, we respect them, but we have to respect also our constitution. So, which means that technically, this electoral commission will tell us which date can be okay without not respecting our constitution.
Pascal Yambenda is the chair of Burundi's ruling CNDD-FDD party. He was speaking with me from the capital, Bujumbura. The UN Refugee Agency says more than 2.25 million South Sudanese have become displaced since fighting between government and rebel forces erupted in December 2013. The agency says the number of internally displaced and refugees is growing as fighting continues. Lisa Schlein reports from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
As South Sudan marks its fourth anniversary of independence, people are being forced every day to flee their homes because of this young country's raging civil war. The United Nations reports 1.5 million people are internally displaced, and more than 730,000 people have sought refuge in four neighboring countries. Meanwhile, nearly 250,000 Sudanese refugees have fled into South Sudan to escape fordighting in the Blue Nile and South Kordofan states. UN refugee spokesman Adrian Edwards says no political end to this conflict is in sight.
Recent weeks have seen an escalation of violence in Unity and Upper Nile. Heavy fighting has forced tens of thousands of people to flee to the bush and swamplands, to areas that are often difficult to reach. This and a volatile and insecure situation is making humanitarian access extremely difficult. Ongoing hostilities and reported increase in human rights violations and abuses have contributed to additional displacement.
The UNHCR reports 180 South Sudanese refugees arrive in Ethiopia every day, and the country is already hosting about 425,000 refugees. Hundreds of thousands of others have sought refuge in Sudan, Uganda, and Kenya. In the meantime, cholera, which broke out last month in the capital Juba, has spread to the city of Bor. The UN Children's Fund reports more than 700 cholera cases have claimed 32 lives. UNICEF spokesman Christophe Bouillerac says 1 in 5 of these deaths is children under age 5.
If the current outbreak spreads beyond current locations, especially into the states affected by conflict, the lack of functioning health facilities could lead to a devastating loss of life. Currently, 184 health facilities have been closed or destroyed in conflict-affected areas.
Bouillerac says aid agencies are racing against time to prevent the spread of cholera up the Nile River in South Sudan, especially during the rainy season. He says UNICEF's priority is to reach vulnerable children with urgently needed clean water and vaccinations against this deadly disease. He says more than 100,000 people, many of them children, have received oral cholera vaccines in civilian sites in Juba and Bentiu. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Today's Wednesday, July 8th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 16 minutes past the hour. A Sudanese opposition figure says President Omar al-Bashir is on the verge of abandoning his national dialogue initiative launched last January to promote discussion among Sudan's stakeholders about the country's future. President Bashir's ruling National Congress Party has said the dialogue would resume after the Muslim holy month of Ramadan. But Hassan Osman Urizik, deputy president of the Opposition Reform Now movement, says President Bashir deceived the international community with his national dialogue idea so that he could run in last April's election. Rizik also says President Bashir's new government is like an old wine in new bottles because there will be no change in the government's policies.
I think that there is nothing to speak about. Yani, there is just changing faces, and the policy is the same policy. Yani, Omar Bashir did not change his policy. So they will act as the last government did. Nothing will change.
Are there any opposition members in the new government?
No. They only nominated and those who participated in the previous government. There is no new opposition parties that participated in this new government. All the opposition is opposition inside and outside the country, are outside the cabinet of Omar al-Bashir.
So where are we now in the national dialogue? Because prior to the election, the government was talking about a national dialogue. Where are we now?
They say that they will initiate the national dialogue after Ramadan and Eid vacation in Sudan. They said so, but there is nothing, Yani. I don't think that the national dialogue will succeed because all opposition parties outside the government and outside Sudan are against the national dialogue because the government did not fulfill what we have been agreed upon in the roadmap Addis Ababa agreement about releasing the political prisoners and also about freedom of expression and freedom of media. All these are not implemented. They didn't implement what we have been agreed upon.
From the opposition viewpoint, do you suspect that President Omar al-Bashir used the idea of national dialogue just in time for the election and then that would be it, nothing else?
They used it just for elections and just to deal with the international community. Because the international community, especially the European Union, America, and African Union, they are putting pressure on the government to start the national dialogue. So they are speaking about national dialogue to tell them that we are there and we are going to initiate the national dialogue.
Hassan Osman Rizik is the deputy president of the Opposition Reform Now Movement Party. He was speaking with me from the Sudanese capital, Khartoum. There was chaos on Tuesday in Zimbabwe's capital when the Harare City Council attempted to forcefully relocate some vendors to sites that the government has set aside. Thomas Chiripasi of VOA Zimbabwe Service has details from Harare.
Some of Some municipal police tried to destroy market stalls erected by vendors at Copacabana and urging the street traders to relocate to new vending sites that have been set up by the city council, a move that was resisted by the vendors. Promise Mkwananzi, programs coordinator of the Zimbabwe Informal Sector Organization, told Studio 7 that the actions of the municipal police were unjustified because council has not yet put up proper infrastructure at the newly designated vending sites.
About 50 police officers were milling around the city, initially trying to persuade people to leave their sites and trying to intimidate them to do so. But the vendors flatly refused to leave, insisting that government must address the economic challenges in the country, must create employment, must resuscitate industry, so that when they leave, they have alternative places to go.
Mkwananzi urged the council to ensure that all the street traders were accommodated in stores that have proper infrastructure and are moved after government has agreed with all stakeholders on proper ways of relocating vendors. He added that authorities should ensure that they create employment and put the country's economy back on track first before evicting the street vendors.
You can never totally eliminate the issue of vendors. It will always be there. The proliferation of vendors is an indication of a deep-seated economic crisis that must be arrested immediately by government and other stakeholders.
The board secretary of the National Vendors Union of Zimbabwe, Justice Manai, who also sells some wares in Harare street pavements, condemned the municipal police actions. He tells Studio 7 that removing vendors from the streets would have a negative impact on their lives, as the economic downturn shows no signs of abating.
Our livelihoods emanate from the day-to-day sales we make in the streets. I go to Mbari every morning. I hold bananas, apples, and the like. Come into the CBD and sell those wares to passers-by and well-wishers. I make my living from that.
Harare Mayor Bernard Manyenyeni said his council's policy is that no vendor will be forcibly evicted from the city center. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
In Kenya, it is not unusual to see pregnant women satisfying a curious craving by eating stones extracted from quarries and traditionally sold at roadside stalls. The stones, known locally as odowa, are now finding their way into mainstream markets, despite the better advice of doctors. Rael Ombuo has the story.
Joyce Navtutu, a 29-year-old mother of two, says she could not resist the odowa craving during both of her pregnancies. All of a sudden, she had a natural craving to eat stones.
When I was pregnant, especially this last pregnancy, there's a time I just woke up and I felt like, let me try this. Okay, when you pour some water on soil or something like that, you feel there's like a smell. So that smell was the one which was like, I felt it was smelling nice, so I felt like eating. I started eating, and then I could not stop.
The craving and eating of non-food items such as clay, dirt, or sand is quite common in Kenya among pregnant women. Eating the marble-sized stones has spread to many towns and is sold at roadsides, in small markets, and shopping malls in urban centers. Leah Adhiambo, a broker in the trade, supplies most of these stones to high-end supermarkets. She says the habit has become increasingly popular and supermarkets have warmed up to the idea of stocking their shelves with the stones.
Sailors, we realized that the demand of this stone was high amongst pregnant women of all ages, irrespective of class. The reason we package them is so that they may look appealing to attract a certain class of women who, let's say, cannot go to look for the stones deep within the market.
Leah is quick to admit that the stones are selling and it is becoming a profitable business.
We stock the shelves almost every week, which means that the stones are selling.
Experts say the craving to eat odowa is largely due to a deficiency of vital minerals like calcium in the body, and that this may indicate a serious medical condition. Jane Mwangi, a doctor at Miliki Afya Clinic in Nairobi, explains.
During pregnancy, there is depletion of calcium and a lot of minerals in the body due to the demand. So I think they go for those stones because to some extent they contain those minerals. So most of the time they go to look for those minerals in the stones instead of coming to the hospitals being given the supplements they need.
Mwangi says the stones can also potentially cause infections and other problems. Recent research by African Council for the Gifted and Talented also suggests that eating stones during pregnancy can affect children's health and their ability to learn. So while the trend may become more fashionable, according to doctors, the risk probably outweighs the benefits. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Twenty-five minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with rugby. Uganda national men's team, the Rugby Cranes, were crowned Uganda Sports Press Association USPA award winners for June in Kampala, Uganda. The award follows their triumph over Kenya in the annual Elgon Cup. Today, Wednesday, Uganda tackled Mauritius at the Confederation of African Rugby Division 1B Africa Cup in Kampala. Senegal play Botswana and Madagascar face Ivory Coast. Meanwhile, South Africa beat Mexico 3-0 in men's football at the World Student Games in Gwangju, South Korea on Tuesday. In women's basketball, Canada beat Mozambique 65-44 as Brazil outplayed Uganda 93-59. Turning to athletics, Burundi's Antoine Gakeme won 800 meters in 1 minute and 44.93 seconds at the European Athletics Classic meet in Sud-Velerunen in France. Kenyan Hilary Maiyo and Ethiopian Etenesh Diro triumphed in men's 3,000 meters and women's 3,000 meter steeplechase, respectively. In Switzerland, a showdown in the men's 800 meters featuring Ethiopian world champion Mohamed Aman, Botswana's African champion Nigel Amos, and Kenya's Olympic champion David Rudisha is set to be the highlight at the IAAF Diamond League in Lausanne today, Wednesday. Benin's Noele Yarigo and Ugandan Winnie Nanyondo ran women's 800 meters. Ethiopia men's 5,000 meter dominance will be tested when Mukhtar Edris, Hagos Gebrehiwet, and newcomer Yomif Kejelcha face Kenya's Thomas Longisiwa, Caleb Ndiku, Ugandan Moses Kipsiro, and Morocco's Abdelati Igida. South Africans Anaso Jobodwana, Louis Fansel, and Kotso Mokwena contest the men's 200 meters, 400 meter hurdles, and triple jump, respectively, while Egypt's Ihab Abdelrahman El Sayed and Kenyan Julius Yego compete in javelin. Africans are expected to shine in women's 1500 meters as Morocco's Siham Hilali and Malika Akawi challenge Ethiopia's Dawit Seyaum and Senbere Teferi, along with Kenyans Faith Chepngetich, Kipyegon, and Mercy Cherono. Nigeria's Blessing Okagbare Igoteguonor competes in 200 meters and long jump as Ivory Coast's Muriela Hore and Nigerian Regina George are entered in women's 200 meters and 400 meters, respectively. South African Wenda Nell and Morocco's Hayat Lambaki contest women's 400 meter hurdles, while Ethiopian Hiwot Ayeleu and Kenyan Lydia Chepkurui are front runners in the women's 3,000 meter steeplechase. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Here's our listener mail for this Wednesday morning, July 8th.
Good morning, Daybreak Africa. The recent call on President Barack Obama of America not to extend his gay marriage or homosexualism policy to Kenya during his forthcoming visit by the Kenyans was not as if they don't love their American-born illustrious son, but because the African culture and Christianity that is widely practiced in the continent forbids homosexualism. Albert Alagbo from Akanebe and Federal Polytechnic in Ebonyi State, Nigeria. Thank you.
And we thank you, listener, for your comment. And that's it for this Wednesday, July 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Barton in Washington, saying have a nice day, Africa.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, the political crisis in South Sudan is taking a heavy toll on the nation's citizens. Nearly 2 million people have been displaced due to the fighting between supporters of President Salva Kiir and opposition leader Riek Machar. Tune in on Wednesday at 18:30 UTC on VOA Africa.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.